From the Premier League, it's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. Well, it may seem only 5 minutes since we were basking in Bruno's brilliance, clapping Kane's conversions, and also questioning just why we tinkered so much. But it's time, fantasy managers, as the saying goes, we go again. The summer of waiting is over. The Premier League season is just around the corner, so that means FPL is almost back, and so are we on the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. I'm Kelly Summers, and I'll be here with you each and every week, guiding you through the roller coaster that is being an FPL manager. And each week, I'll be flanked by our army of experts. This week, we have French football journalist Julien Laurent. Jules, good to have you back.
Thank you, Kelly. Hi, everyone.
And likewise, good again to be joined by half of the FPL family, Lee Bonfield.
Hey, Kelly, good to be back.
Good to have you. And we also got a debut this week on the pod. We're kicking things off in style. We've got journalist Lars Sivertsen.
Hello.
Lars, good to have you with us.
And let's start with you, Lars. Are you an FPL obsessive just like the rest of us?
I am, yeah. And this is suitable for a podcast. I had a period where I... Oh, we'd always start and then halfway through the season go, it's not going well, blah, blah, blah. A couple of years ago, I realized that the trick is actually to find podcasts about it that you like and add them to your rotation. It's a really good way of keeping involved. So this is really good, and I'm delighted to be on this.
We are delighted to have your expert analysis. We're always delighted to have Jules' expert analysis as well, even if you do miss the odd deadline. Jules, how are you feeling ahead of the new season?
I'm so confident. I mean, last season I let other people win because, you know, as the French team will tell
Jules.
You, it's not always good when you always win. Lars, by the way, considering this is your debut, you should be singing a song as, you know, as everybody making their debut, first cap or everything.
Standing on a table, yeah.
Yeah.
I really don't think anyone wants that.
Probably you're right. But no, very excited, Kelly. Very, very excited.
Good to see that nothing has changed with Jules over the summer, still winding us all up. Lee, good to have you back as well. As half of the FPL family, I guess you never switch off from FPL. Anyone that's been following your Twitter feed will be seeing that you've been keeping us up to date with pre-season friendlies, transfer business and things like that. Do you ever switch off? At what point do you seriously start thinking about the new campaign?
Well, I guess I took a little bit of a breather at the end of the last campaign. And I actually decided not to play the Euros fantasy game because I thought I actually just want to watch this football and just enjoy it. And actually the Euros was fantastic, wasn't it? But I guess I started thinking seriously about FPL once the final was over. So once the England hysteria died down a little bit, I then thought, okay, now's the time to get a team together. Now's the time to start thinking about prices and tinkering. So yeah, ready for another season of FPL.
Well, Lee, out of all of us on the podcast this week, you finished highest last season in the world. Where did you finish and what's the target this season?
Well, last season I was 66k I finished, which was pretty good. I was pretty pleased with that. So If I think about my target for this season, obviously the target's always to do as well as possible. And it's actually difficult to have a target from the off, I would say. If you start thinking about, you know, game week 5-6, you know, if the teams start to settle down, then I think you maybe think about targets for the season. But if I was in the top 50k, the top 40k, I'd be pretty happy with that this year.
Let's very quickly talk about team names as well, because I'm still undecided on mine. Lars, tell the listeners, what's your team name?
Well, this is subject to change. Mine is currently called Norse Remorse.
Nice.
Because that is really the feelings the team tends to bring me. I'm joking, of course. It brings me a lot of joy, but it might change. It has been the Roth Ravers in the past as well, which I'm quite fond of. And also Gillingham. One year it was Gillingham for no obvious reason.
Well, don't worry. I named my team after a player that went out on loan and did absolutely nothing last season. So I'm picking mine very carefully. Lee, you're still the Little Beauties. And Jules, I hear the big news from your team is that you've changed names.
I did, indeed. I went for Sambi on Ice for the Arsenal new signing,
nice.
Sambi Lokonga. And for all of us, as a kid who watched Bambi on Ice, I thought it was really good.
One for the younger listeners there. That got a laugh. That's always good. Now, a reminder, you guys can pit your wits against the panel and each other, and you can see all of those team names. You can join our FPL Podcast League. The code is 1KIKS7. Now then, let's get into it and let's look at the key players in all of our panellists' teams. I'm not sure about you guys, but there are always a few standout picks that I always put in my team first and then build the rest of the team around, often meaning I end up with a lot of very cheap 4 million defenders who don't play at all. But Jules, who was first in your side this season?
So I have to say, I woke up the other night with a vision, like really a vision.
And, oh, no. And
this is no, listen to me.
I so missed you, Jules.
Don't pick, well, as much as possible, anyone who had a busy summer. Forget about players who went to the Euros. Forget about players who went to the Copa America. Forget about players who went to the Olympics. You should, as much as possible, get someone who had a free summer. And, I mean, it's a bit obvious, but as much as you can, I think, this season especially, and after this summer, after the last 18 months we've had with the pandemic and the season on and off and congested fixtures and everything, I think rest this summer has to be the key. And so I woke up in the middle of the night thinking, like, this is it. This is my team done. I will pick no players at all who had a busy summer. There's still one or two in my team. And then I watched the Olympics. But I think this could be key, certainly for the first few weeks, like Lee said, up to game week 5-6, when your team settles. At the beginning, I think the ones who had a free summer should potentially have the best start of the season. In that view, I think Mo Salah for me and Trent Alexander-Arnold had to be there. The best thing that could, and I know it's cruel to say that for him, but the best thing that could happen to Alexander-Arnold was not to go to the Euros. One, he would not have played anyway because Southgate being so conservative and being in love with Kyle Walker so much, there would have been no room for Trent. So stay home, nurse your injury, get over the last season and start again and sign a new deal and be the best version of yourself that you can be, which I think it will be, and very similar for Mo Salah.
I don't know how many minutes we are now into the podcast, but Jules has already got in about the French national team and already done a dig towards the English national team. I knew that was coming.
That's a division.
Lars, what about you? Do you kind of agree there on Salah and Trent? Because a lot of the drafts that I've seen amongst the community does seem to have Salah and Trent, and the fact that what Jules is saying there about fresh legs.
Whether they've had fresh legs or not, I just feel going into it without Salah just feels a bit foolish. I mean, he had, by his standards, a slightly middling season last year, but he still ends up on 231 points. It's just one of those that the downside of not having him, if he scores a hat-trick against Norwich, is like, you know, suddenly you're off to a dreadful start and you're last in all your mini-leagues. And it's just being slightly terrified of that, especially when he's about 48% owned at the moment. I'm looking at you. I notice that Jules has been a bit bold here and not picked Bruno Fernandes, which I think is a big call and a big swing and a big move, and I admire it because it's something I want to do. But again, I'm so far too much of a coward. I do suspect the Bruno Fernandes points will keep coming. He's one of those players, a lot of his points feel a bit dirty. Like, you watch the games and there's like it's a sideways pass to Paul Pogba who hits it in from like 40 yards. And it's like, oh, assist points for Fernandes. And all these set pieces and the penalties and the stuff. But the points just keep trickling in. And I suspect that'll still keep happening, even if he did play a bit in the summer.
I was one of those people that didn't have him for the game against Manchester City last season. So I've been burnt once and I'm not going to be burnt again. But Lee, do you think we've seen that there's going to be some rule changes in the Premier League this season? Do you think that's going to affect Bruno's ownership or maybe make people think twice?
I think it's definitely making people think twice, Kelly. Yeah, I mean, half his goals were penalties, 9 out of the 18 last season. So will it have an impact on him? I think it might initially. Yeah, I mean, whenever the rules change in the way that they have, you sort of feel like there's going to need to be like serious contact now for a penalty to be given. I think that's the way the rules are changing, right? They're trying to change the rule around the fact if there's even if there's a little bit of contact, maybe they let that go. Maybe they're a little bit more lenient, let's say, with the penalty decision. So yeah, it could have an impact on the way people feel about the penalty takers in their FPL team. And I think if you look at the key one, the Bruno Fernandes is going to be a hot topic, no doubt about it, because of his price. At 12 million, you're kind of relying on, yes, those dirty points that Lars is talking about, the sideways passes. And by the way, I don't care whether they're dirty or clean FPL points, I just want points. But that will get people thinking, and it is getting the Twitter community talking about whether Bruno is actually worth 12 million. I still think he is, but it's causing some debate.
The second most owned player at the moment, obviously plenty of time to change as we are recording, is Luke Shaw of Manchester United. Manchester United obviously had a really impressive summer in the transfer window by the looks of things so far. Luke Shaw had a brilliant Euros as well. So that kind of goes against what Jules was saying before about picking players who maybe have had the summer off. But is Luke Shaw someone you're looking at, Lars?
Yeah, he's in my team. I think he's probably 500,000 cheaper than I thought he was going to be. United picked up a decent number of clean sheets last season. Shaw has been improving, he's attacking out. He has some kind of attacking output. The fact that they've added Varane, you expect them to be even a little bit more solid defensively this season. So it just seems to me, if you have a starting left back who's quite attack minded for what I would expect to be one of the better defensive teams in the league at 5-5, it does make a lot of sense to find space for that.
The thing with Shaw, and he's in my team because I said as much as you can, the vision was...
Hold on a sec, what happened
player.
To the vision?
No, I said as much. As
anybody
much.
Who had a busy summer.
Doesn't have to be 100% of your team with
I only played players. Right the way up until the final, Jules, but yeah, there we go.
No, but I think what's really important though is where Jadon Sancho is going to play, because we saw last season that a lot of United with the ball and with Maguire coming out with the ball as well on that sort of left-hand side playing with Shaw, The biggest pattern of play, if you want, was that left-hand side with Shaw. If Sancho plays on the right-hand side, then you would expect the ball to go far more on the right than it did last season, because that's not the way they attacked last season at all. They attacked far more on the left-hand side with Shaw. So I'm really hoping that Solskjaer will kind of, in a way, either he wants to balance the team and Sancho on the right and Shaw on the left balances your team, or have a super left-hand side with Maguire as a left centre-back anyway, Shaw as your left-back, and then Sancho as your left-winger. And you can just imagine the Sancho-Shaw partnership, which could be pretty special, I think. And then you don't have the risk of losing some point for Shaw if United start attacking much more on the right with Jadon Sancho, if that's where he plays, if that makes sense. So I'm really hoping that for all the Luke Shaw owners that we'll see Jadon Sancho more on the left than on the right-hand side.
One thing to consider, Jules, is that if Shaw is rested for the first couple of game weeks, and I think there has been some talk on Twitter and in the press about maybe a rib injury or something, and as you rightly said before, Jules, he went far in the Euros, right? Which was great from an England perspective. So let's suggest he doesn't play in the first kind of one or two game weeks. A highly owned player like that in FPL often will suffer a price drop or two over the first few weeks if FPL managers don't see him playing. So just be wary of that. I mean, buying him into your team at 5.5, you might be able to pick him up maybe at 5.4 or 5.3 in 2 to 3 game weeks' time when he does actually start getting some minutes.
So in general, there is a consensus amongst the panel about most of the big hitters. Now let's move on to those who were a little less decided on.
Okay then, so we're decided on the fact that maybe we do need Mo Salah. We should be potentially targeting players who haven't played as much this summer. But of course, we can't have all of the big hitters, and we do need a few slightly different players to maybe mix up those teams. So come on then, Lee, who have we not mentioned so far that isn't a controversial pick, so to speak, but is someone that maybe not everyone would straight away put in their teams?
So interestingly, Rafinha at 6.5 million, he's kind of in the... I wouldn't say he's an essential pick, and I wouldn't put him up there in the kind of high ownership of Shaw or Salah in the sort of 40+, nearly 50%. But certainly, he's 21.9% owned at time of recording, Rafinha. And at 6.5 million, I think he's going to reprise his role as the central creative hub for Leeds this season. And if you think about the amount of chances that he created for teammates last year, and Leeds actually were a little bit wasteful in front of goal, and a lot was written and a lot of rhetoric around how wasteful Bamford potentially was, despite actually scoring quite a few goals last season. But I remember games where, you know, he was taking set pieces, corners, free kicks, Cooper was missing headers, Bamford was missing goals, Dallas was missing opportunities that were put on a plate for him by Rafinha. So if Leeds can work on that kind of being a bit more clinical in front of goal, I can see the amount of assists that Rafinha gets going up this season. And of course, he can supplement that with goals as well. So at 6.5, being the creative hub for a team like Leeds, I think he's going to get quite a lot of FPL managers' attention.
Well, someone who had a very good scoring rate last season was Ollie Watkins at Aston Villa. And the reason I'm mentioning him in this section, I feel like if we'd have recorded this podcast a few days before, we're recording this on Thursday morning, UK time, of course, the last night for us was when the news of Danny Ings's signing from Southampton to Aston Villa broke, took a lot of us by surprise, and also saw a lot of FPL team templates, I think, torn up a little bit, because Ollie Watkins was the most owned forward in the game. And now that could potentially, Jules, have a bit of an impact on him and where he plays within that Villa team. Who do we go for from Villa now?
I think you go for both if you want, because I'm convinced that they will play both up front. The best Danny Ings, as the one playing in a 4-4-2 formation, is the one who doesn't play on his own up front. He's the one who has a strike partner, Southampton, he had a few, but I think Watkins and Ings can work so well together. And I would be amazed if Dean Smith is thinking, you know what, Ollie Watkins, 14 goals in his first ever Premier League season, 5 assists, that's not good enough. We can't start him next season. We need another striker. For me, Danny Ings was signed to play with Watkins up front together because, again, I think they complement each other well. And then if behind that, you've got Buendia to create chances for them, you've got Bertrand Traoré, you've got others who have replaced Jack Grealish, Leon Bailey as well, who will create for them too. The only worry you should have, I think, as a manager is they might split the goals between them, between Watkins and Ings, and to a lesser degree, Buendia, who can score as well, and Traoré, we saw last season too. So that's the only worry. Otherwise, I'm convinced they both be starting, and Villa will slightly change the way they've been playing, because before it was Watkins on his own up front, but now that Grealish is gone, now that Ings has signed, I would be amazed if Watkins was benched.
I kind of agree with most of that, but I still wouldn't start with him just for the reason you say. We don't know if they play the both of them. We don't quite know how the dynamic between them will be and who ends up getting the chances and this sort of thing. And this goes back to you said you had a vision, Jules. I've heard your vision. I like it. It makes sense. I've also had a similar vision this year, which is trying to learn from my stupidity last season, because I had a total rush of blood to the head in the last couple of days before the season kicked off, and I wanted to live a little and added a bunch of like new players in the league and players who had been transferred and did sort of all the things that we know in FPL is really dangerous, and I sort of started the season with Havertz and Werner and stuff, and it was a complete disaster, and I basically spent the rest of the season trying to catch up with my really risky decisions. So this season I'm going to play it incredibly safe. So my vision is that I want really no one in my team who are new to the league, and ideally no one who's changed clubs. I want players who I know where they're going to play and what they're going to do. No, none of this new funny business. I'm going to try to learn from my mistakes. So I'd be very careful, just because you know the whole thing is going to get a little bit disrupted, and I'd probably try to look elsewhere, because there are some interesting options in that 7.58 bracket of striker.
When you say interesting options, Lars, who are you kind of looking at?
Well, listen, obviously, if you're going with Rafinha, then maybe it's a bit much, but I still think Bamford's going to be doing the Bamford things for Leeds. I would fully expect him to sort of run around and get into a bunch of really good positions and maybe miss a few chances, but score enough of them that it'll still be a really good option. I think if Michail Antonio is fit and West Ham don't sign a striker, that's very, very interesting. And Calvert-Lewin at 8, I mean, maybe Rafa Benitez is ever won't be a sort of spectacular attacking wonder machine, but Calvert-Lewin, I think, will still score goals. So there are some interesting things around about that price point.
So Lars, I agree with you on the Antonio thing, by the way, and Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Antonio, okay, there's 0.5 between them, so there is a decision to make in terms of budget. But both of them have really nice fixtures. Dominic Calvert-Lewin's fixtures to start the season in particular are great, but I do subscribe to your thinking, Lars, which is, you know, you've got new manager there. You know, a couple of players coming in and out. I'm a bit reluctant to dive in on Everton despite the fixtures, but Antonio is absolutely one that's going to be in my team. 7.5. The first four fixtures for West Ham look really good. They've got Newcastle, Crystal Palace and Southampton as three of their first four. And actually the other game is Leicester City, which, given what's happened to Fofana, Johnny Evans is out as well, so they might be defensively a bit weakened as well. So the first four look good for the Hammers. Game week 5, it gets a little bit more difficult for West Ham. And at the same time, I think their European campaign kicks off. So I'm thinking about Antonio for the first 4 weeks with an exit plan to somebody else in that sort of price bracket. One of the others that we've mentioned probably. But for the first four, Antonio looks pretty good.
Okay, so we're getting a better idea of who our panellists are picking now and who they're debating on picking. Going to be plenty of changes before next Friday's deadline, I can see. But of course, we can't have all of the big hitters and all of the popular players. We need a few differentials. So let's take a look at those next. Now, this is a section that regular listeners will know we do every week on the pod in terms of essential differentials. I love this stage of the season because we're all trying to look into our crystal ball and work out who's going to be the next Stuart Dallas, the new Lundstrom, the new cheap player that is going to get us loads of points that no one saw coming. So come on then, Jules, you've got all these visions. Who's it going to be this season?
So I've got a good feeling about Hakim Ziyech, because I saw him play against Spurs the day before we recorded this. I saw him play against Arsenal, and in both games, I mean, he scored twice against Spurs. In both games, he was really, really good. And I do think that there was a time that he needed to adapt to English football to start with, to Frank Lampard first, and then to Thomas Tuchel. And I think that now, especially if Chelsea or when Chelsea sign Romelu Lukaku, then I think this could be a very good season from Ziyech. I was really impressed by the way he played so far in this preseason in the friendlies. Again, you go back to my first vision of having a free summer, which I think he will benefit a lot from. And right now he's owned by 1% of the players. So I think that there's something there for 7.5 million. The other thing, and it's just to go back a bit to what Lee was saying about Everton. I think Rafael Benitez is going to make this Everton team very, very solid defensively. And I do think that if you're thinking about someone like Mason Holgate, if he plays, because he's been starting a little bit in preseason, not always, but Ben Godfrey, for example, has been starting in the Florida Cup both games, one with Holgate, one with Keane. I do think that defensively they're going to be so strong and so hard to play against that maybe there's some points to come there from Ding, of course, but also maybe from Keane, from Holgate, Godfrey, Pickford even. And those, apart from Ding, are all differential right now. So I think that the Everton defence should be kept in mind.
Going back to Chelsea, Jules, one thing to be wary of, the fact that in the first six game weeks, four of those games are against teams ranked four in the fixture difficulty ranking: Arsenal, Liverpool and Spurs all away, and Man City at home. So obviously, at this stage of the season, we're all going in with optimism, but we do also have to consider the fixtures as well. But 7.5 million, as you said, good mid-price midfielder. What about you, Lee? Who are your differentials?
Oh, well, I subscribe to what Jules was saying about Chelsea, actually. I'm looking at them and looking at Havertz myself. But Ziyech's performance last night in the friendly was very good. Did catch my eye. Speaking of pre-season games, I have been watching quite a bit of Arsenal, actually. And Kieran Tierney is really catching my eye. Now, we know what Kieran Tierney's all about. You're going to get some attacking potential with him as well, in particular assists. And I think with the addition of Ben White as well in that defence, in that Arsenal defence, and if Granit Xhaka, they can tie him down to a new contract and keep him, I think we're going to see a more solid Arsenal. Actually, towards the end of last season, certainly the second half of last season, Arsenal were right up there in terms of defensive solidity. So for them to add to that with Ben White means I think there's more clean sheets coming. And Tierney, I think, given that he gives you a bit of attacking potential, I think he's worth finding that extra 0.5 to upgrade one of your 4.5s to a 5 million defender. So at 8.5, team selected by right now in terms of time of recording, he comes in at a bit of a differential for me. He's going a little bit under the radar. And I like his teammate as well, Emil Smith-Rowe, who's also playing in that kind of number 10 role, in that kind of role that Ozil used to play in quite a bit before he left the club. And I think he's getting into all sorts of dangerous attacking areas that I would want my FPL asset to be in. And at 5.5, he can slot in there really nicely as your fifth midfielder. So, yeah, don't sleep on Arsenal. They've got some reasonable fixtures to start the season and there's a couple of differentials in there.
Yeah, Ben White currently owned by around 20% of managers. He's 4.5 million. If you are interested in spending a little bit more, though, Kieran Tierney up there at 5 million, currently owned by less than 10% of managers. So a real differential. Come on then, Lars. We're about to find out just how rogue you are as an FPL manager and how brave you are. Who are your differentials?
Well, you know what?
Don't disappoint.
Well, since you set it up that way, I have to go totally rogue here. And he's not in my team yet. So this is kind of because I don't really have any big differentials in my team. I guess the biggest differential in my team is Matt Loughton, which is not that exciting, but he is just 3% owned. And at 4.5, you get a price of that piece of that Burnley defense, and you might get an assist here and there. So that's, if you're filling your team with a couple of 4.5 defenders, I think Loughton is a good option. But I'm keeping a very close eye on this. And since you've encouraged me to go rogue, you know what? I think 6.5 for Dele Alli is a very good price. If he plays if he's playing at all. Now, it's not easy to feel good about Spurs right now with the whole Harry Kane thing happening, with the sort of very strange managerial hunt that went on forever and they didn't seem to know what they were doing. But if Dele Alli plays, and if he plays anything like what we know he can, 6.5 is an incredible price for him. And he's currently 1.2% owned. And he has been playing in the friendly, so you know if there's a chance he starts, I think maybe not for the first round against City, that would be very rogue. But keep a very close eye on him, especially if he starts in that game. That's someone you might want to get into your team pretty fast.
I actually really like that, Lars, because Dele Alli has been in one of my drafts. I'm not sure I can do that with Manchester City up first, but for everyone listening, Lars just gave me a thumbs up. We're already friends on the podcast. You can come back again. One thing I did want to mention then, though, we've all just talked about Manchester City. We've gone through our certain picks. We've gone through our maybe picks. We've now gone through differentials and no one has mentioned Manchester City. Is that the fear of the Pep roulette, Lee?
I, I guess so. Yeah, I guess so. Although, if I was to make some predictions now early on in the season, I would say that they're going to be there or thereabouts, City, if not favourites to win it again this year. So to go into an FPL season with no Man City does feel a bit wrong. I guess the thing is there's so much still to happen potentially at the Etihad in terms of transfers over the next couple of weeks before the window closes. With a time of recording, it looks as if Grealish is going to go there, but I don't think he's 100% done yet. The Harry Kane saga rumbles on, and I haven't seen too many players leaving City either, right? So I think there's still a lot of changes to happen there. If Harry Kane ends up at City, I mean, forget it. You've got to rip up your draft and start again, haven't you? I mean, there's 30 to 35 goals in it for Kane this season, the amount that they create at City. So I'd have to find a way to get Harry Kane in my draft, I guess, and maybe we'd have to re-record the whole podcast. But there's so much change to come at City. For me, I'm waiting for it to settle down, and then maybe I'll act from there.
Does Grealish become a more or a less attractive pick if he goes to Manchester City, Jules? Because there's the argument, isn't there, that sometimes being a big fish in a little pond, he was guaranteed the minutes when fit at Aston Villa. Maybe he isn't guaranteed those minutes at Manchester City, but he's in a team that arguably will create more chances and that he'll flourish in. So where's your stance on Jack Grealish if he goes to City?
I think it's interesting because it's not just the minutes, I think. It's the fact that at Villa, everything was built around him. So regardless of who had the ball, the first option was Jack Grealish. At City, it's not going to be the case. As amazing as it is as a player, and he will be a big part of that team, but he won't be the first option for the ball to go to. That would be Kevin De Bruyne before him, for example. That could be one of the fullbacks before him. There could be Phil Foden before him. So he would have to share the ball far more than he did, and the creativity that he did at Villa, for example. And it reminds me a bit of Coutinho, who obviously was really good at Liverpool, but then went to a club in Barcelona where not everything, in his case, nothing was built around him or for him anyway. But I think Grealish needs almost for us as managers to really reward us with a lot of points. He needs to be the boss. He needs to be the key guy. And I don't think he will have that at City. So I would not pick Grealish as a City player in my team, certainly not at the beginning, because I do feel that the talent is not a problem, but I do think that his input in the game would be a bit lessened because he would have to share the ball with all those other incredible players that City have. And I just don't think he would have the same return that he had at his best moment at Villa, for example.
Okay, so we have heard who our panellists are considering and who their dead certs are for their team so far. So we're going to do a quick stock check and see where their lineups are standing at the moment and who they've got in their team. So Lee, let's look at your team first. As you've said, you've got Bruno, you've got Mo Salah, you've got Trent, Tierney. You've also gone for Havertz and Rafinha. So you've been very true to your word so far. And you have got Danny Ings in there. Was there some difficult decisions? Who are you still thinking could change?
Oh, this could, anything could happen, frankly, over the next couple of weeks. This is what my team looks like today, but I'm pretty sure as soon as we finish recording, I'll be tinkering again. It's one of those things, and towards the end of the podcast, we're going to talk about, rules for the season. And one of my rules was don't tinker too much over the summer, but I've just broken that rule a million times. So yes, I've got most of what you've just described, Kelly, and I have gone for Danny Ings. But again, am I just being kind of like reactive to what happened yesterday? Maybe I am, but Danny Ings has got, proven pedigree in the Premier League. He's going into a team which, as we've already alluded to, have got, Buendia and Bailey and a whole raft of new creativity around him, including Watkins as well, who I expect to drift out left a little bit in that role that he kind of played a little bit when he was at Brentford. But again, Watkins is still very creative. So all of that creativity around Ings is only going to be a good thing. And Dina as well. We haven't discussed Dina. He's in my team right now. I think he's about 0.5 underpriced, Dina. You know what you're going to get with him. A bit of attacking output, set pieces, etc. And with Dominic Calvert-Lewin fit and firing on the end of those crosses as well, I think he could do well under Benitez, particularly as the guys were suggesting earlier, Rafa's going to come in, I think, and make that team a bit more defensively solid. So I'm expecting clean sheets and a bit of upside in those opening fixtures for Dina. So that's my team, with Sanchez in goal as well. Got to keep a little eye on that in terms of his fitness, but that's where I am, yeah, for now, for the next few hours at least, and then I'll change it again, I'm sure.
Lars, looking at your team, it's actually quite similar to Lee's in a lot of ways. You've got Sanchez in goal, Shaw, Dina, Alexander-Arnold, Bruno, Salah, I have noticed though, you've got Diogo Jota, you've gone for the Liverpool treble up.
Yeah.
And you've gone for two in midfield, or kind of two up front, depending on the way Liverpool play and the way you look at it. What's the thinking there?
That might change. I'm thinking very much about downgrading someone so I can turn Jota into Havertz. But you know what? It's risky because you don't know if he'll start. But you also know he has even if he doesn't start, his potential off the bench is, you know, he can be a very explosive player, and they've got Norwich and Burnley in their first two. So I think there is a chance you can get a good haul from him. But I have to confess, I'm not fully confident in that pick. That is one that is subject to change. But I do think there is a case to be made for just risking the potential of him ending up on the bench for the sake of the upside that you can have from a sort of fit and firing Diogo Jota against two defences you'd expect Liverpool to have quite a lot of joy against in the first two games.
We heard Lee mention Emile Smith-Rowe. He has got him in his team. You've gone for Bukayo Saka in the midfield. They've got Brentford away first up. 6.5 million if you are interested in Saka. Is he locked in?
No, Saka really is at risk of being downgraded here if I'm going to try to make my way to Havertz. But I just again think 6.5 is a good price for him. I'm expecting him to, you know, to return a little bit more going forward this season. You'd think, you know, I think Arsenal's best moments last season was in that winter month period when Saka and Smith Rowe just really took charge of that team, and you saw what this team could be all about. And I'm hoping for more for Saka, and I'm not fully locked in, but I think at 6.5 he's a good pick.
And finally, Jules, your team isn't quite as rogue as I was hoping for, given the fact you've had all of these crazy visions. However, you have got what we thought in there. You've gone for Dina as well, Trent, Luke Shaw. You've got Ziyech in there, as you said. But let's look at your forwards, Jules, because you've gone for Ivan Toney, Patrick Bamford and Danny Ings. Ivan Toney is someone that I wanted to highlight because 6.5 million, you've all got him in your team. Newly promoted Brentford, lots of excitement, I think, around them. He made the step up last season to the Championship, broke the goal scoring record. Are you confident that he can make the similar step up to the Premier League and kind of take to it like a duck to water, like he did in the Championship?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's that good and that talented. We saw Ollie Watkins having no problems at all adapting to the Premier League. Bamford is another one. We've seen some in the past. We've seen some who struggled too. But I do think that when you've got so much confidence and momentum from one season, and we saw it with Timo Pukki as well, the first time Norwich came down, although he didn't last the whole season, but certainly at the start of it, I think that can carry you, and that confidence, that momentum can really help you having certainly a good start of the season. So I like Toney as a player. At 6.5, I think it's a really good price for him. The others have changed. I've had Antonio as well at some point. I think Richarlison could do good for Benitez. I even looked at Benteke, who finished last season with four goals in his last four Premier League games, and with Mikel Olise, who Prala signed from Reading, who's a wonderful attacking player, creative and everything. Eze on the other side, Zaha too. I think maybe Benteke under Vieira could come and score goals a bit more consistently than in the past, certainly. So, I don't know. I think it's very difficult because what I think is fascinating is none of us have had either Kane, Vardy, Aubameyang, Firmino or Werner in our teams, which are the top five more expensive strikers in the game. So, it's really good, and I think people will have to be a bit creative.
So I'm enjoying Jules' visions. And actually, coming on the show, I was expecting your team to be mostly Paris-born and bred. I'm slightly disappointed that they're not all Parisians.
I'm trying.
You're taking it more seriously than... I mean, for me, I'm very tempted to throw Josh King in there just to have a Norwegian guy because I think you need a little bit of national bias in your fantasy team. But one of the... I'm going completely against my vision in one thing is that I am actually... I do have one player who's new in his club, which is... I have put Ben White in there because I just think a 4-5 defender who looks set to play regularly for Arsenal... You know, Arsenal are pretty solid under Arteta. It's been a little bit underwhelming overall under Arteta, but, you know, if you have a 4.5 defender who should be nailed on, I mean, they don't sign him for 50 million if they're not planning on spending it on using him, and he should be nailed on for top six team. I mean, that's something you surely should have in your squad. And it also does give you an option if you're one of the many people who were on Fofana of Leicester, who unfortunately has picked up a horrendous injury in a preseason friendly, and you're now looking around thinking I need a 4-5 defender. I mean, I've already mentioned I've got Loughton, I've also got Ben White, so I think there's two good options there.
The start of a new season means a fresh new slate for FPL managers, an opportunity to put right those mistakes and not use your wildcard in game week two, not take multiple points hits, and in my case, be a bit more level-headed. I'm not sure I'm kidding about that. But anyway, Jules, other than forget your deadlines, what's your aims for this season or your one rule that you are going to live by? And I'm going to check in on you on game week 38.
You can go with the vision. You know, wake up in the middle of the night saying, this is it. This is the answer. And go for it. I think gut feelings, as much as all the other work that you do around your team and looking at stats and expected goals, fitness and all of that, which we all do, which is the right thing to do, I still think there's a part of that gut feeling that can help you massively as well. You know, you watch games and sometimes watching a player, whether you are in the stadium, neither fans would go back, or whether it's on television, even if the numbers don't back it up, you might have a feeling watching him saying, you know what, he's in good form. There's something there. He's not far from really doing well or having returns or anything like this. And I do think that's important. So gut feelings is good.
Lee, I know your first resolution has got to be to beat your wife, the other half of the FPL family, Sam.
Does that ever happen?
How are you going to do that?
Does that ever happen?
Not for a while, I don't think.
Oh! Yeah. So that's definitely the first one, without a doubt. But I have to be realistic and say it's probably not going to happen again. But one of the things that I actually got wrong quite often early on last season, I couldn't get a captaincy right in the first, I don't know, 10 game weeks or so. I kind of look back at that. I look back at my first 10 game weeks and thought, actually, there was a couple of opportunities there to be a little bit safer. And I'm sorry, this is a bit boring, but I'm going to be a little bit safer with my captaincy. Go a bit more obvious, pick the home player. I can see Salah being my captain for quite a few of the first opening game weeks. So yeah, I'm afraid it's a little bit boring for me, a little bit more conservative with my captaincy is going to be my change that I make this year, as well as trying to beat Sam.
And Lars, other than promising to come back on the pod multiple times this season, what's your resolution?
Well, I hinted at it already. I think I mentioned it already. I'm going to play it safer from the off. I just went completely mad last season and picked a lot of really risky stuff from game week one. And I spent the rest of the year playing catch up. It was terrible. And I did that because I played it very safe the year before and ended up something like 70K, having followed the sort of wisdom of the crowd and the template throughout the season. And I thought, you know what? What's the point of this? We got to live a little. Well, last season, I lived too much. And it's like, you know, if you work in an office and everyone likes you and you've worked there for a long time and one day you turn up without your trousers, like you can come back from that. But if you turn up on your first day without your trousers, it's really bad. Like, it's very difficult to claw that back. So I think this season, play it really safe from the off, so I don't end up like with an overall rank of 7 million after a couple of game weeks. And then if I'm in a decent position as we come into the season, maybe take some big swings and live a little. But, you know, establish yourself as, you know, with a decent points haul first, then make the big swings. I mean, that's my plan for the season.
Lars, I can tell following your FPL journey this season is going to be a lot of fun. Thank you so much to everyone for coming on the podcast this week. That does conclude our preview pod for the new Fantasy Premier League season. Thanks for joining me, Lars, Lee and Jules, and you, the listener, for tuning in. We will be back next week, but in the meantime, you can manage your team and access all the good FPL content via the Premier League's app and website. See you soon.